Welcome to History Here and Now. I'm Thomas Richardson, the voice inside your podcast machine. Today is a great day to learn about history. The HHN podcast is dedicated to bringing you great stories from the past. Here we talk about people, places, events, culture, and practically every other facet involved with history. Now, does it sound complicated? Well, history is just that. It's complicated, but it doesn't have to be. I'm here to help break things down and make history more fun and relatable. So let's get started. Now, today's episode is all about prohibition and bootlegging. I know for some people this is a very interesting and passionate topic to discuss, and people love learning about different types of prohibition. Bootlegging stories from prohibition tell some pretty elaborate and colorful schemes by criminals. Smuggling alcohol through customs, people making bathtub gin, making religious pseudonyms to get sacramental wine, sailing out to Rum Row. These are just some of the stories that have become Americana. Many people were breaking what they interpreted was an unjust law. How un-American was it to ban alcohol? You know, how dare some politicians close down the Jack Daniels and Jim Beam distilleries or iconic brewers like Anheuser-Busch, Schlitz, and Pabst? Now, those who broke the Volstead Act, sometimes referred to as scoff laws, flouted the 18th Amendment, believing that they were battling against tyranny by drinking and bootlegging and bringing alcohol to their customers. Now, bootlegging operations ran all over the Western Hemisphere, from Canada all the way down to Central and South America. You had gangsters from infamous crime families to the normal family making homebrewed beer. They all subverted prohibition for different reasons, and contemporary historians are always investigating the morality involved in all types of bootleggers. Many of them were known for cutting corners because they would thin their alcohol with industrial chemicals, herbal concoctions. Although when they did this, they could make things absolutely deadly. When a person bought from a bootlegger, they were sometimes risking their lives. Now, a sea captain with a heroic folklore reputation arose above the blanket categorization of a bootlegger. He prided himself on never having worked with organized crime or watering down and polluting his alcohol with adulterants. William McCoy and his brother Benjamin were partners in a smuggling operation that ran from the Caribbean all the way down to the eastern seaboard of the United States. Bootlegging to William McCoy was his way of being an honest lawbreaker, as he described himself. And he found inspiration with John Hancock, the founding father whose shipping business was the center of questioning unfair British taxes and smuggling in the American colonies. William and Benjamin gained a reputation in the early 1910s as skilled craftsmen and boat builders in Florida. The two of them ran a small motorboat service and shipyard, but at the start of Prohibition in 1920, the McCoy family fell on hard times. Boat freights were slowly replaced with the growing trucking industry, and the brothers stood at a crossroads. What could they do to earn a living? How could they use their skills to earn money in this new environment? Well, to them, the answer was easy. It was rum running. Now, drawing on his maritime knowledge and experience as a sea captain, McCoy shipped vast quantities of alcohol from Caribbean islands, primarily the Bahamas and Bimini, up through shipping lanes to Florida. And buyers flooded McCoy with purchase orders to fill demands in the southern United States. So many orders that, in fact, in just one trip, McCoy made enough of a profit to pay off his main business expense, his schooner, the Henry L. Marshall. So imagine that. Your entire business, all expenses that you need to run your business, it's all paid off in one trip. And everything else you make after that is just profit. He expanded his rum-running venture to purchase six more vessels, including the Tomoka, which he registered under British customs, to divert suspicion from the U.S. Coast Guard. Because at this time, the Coast Guard is responsible for policing America's shores and preventing rum-runners from bringing things up internationally and selling them on America's shores. And the only problem was is that the Coast Guard was too thinly stretched to really effectively police anything. William McCoy further avoided capture from authorities by pioneering an idea of having barges and freighters filled with product anchored at least 3 miles offshore in international waters. Now, these floating alcohol wholesalers became known colloquially as Rum Row. Credit for this idea has historically gone to McCoy, according to both family records and the U.S. authorities, but has also gone down in legend. By completing business deals at sea, customers could purchase orders, and when ready for pickup, they were outside U.S. jurisdiction. For 3 years, from 1920 to 23, McCoy routinely pocketed anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 per delivery. And if you think about that today, that's approximately $600,000 to $1 million today. And that's just an insane amount of money when you think about it. Imagine making $1 million every time you make a delivery. The brothers' run came to an end really shortly, though, relatively early on in Prohibition. It came to an end on November 23rd, 1923, when the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Seneca tracked the Tomoka into international waters and apprehended the brothers. William McCoy was charged with multiple violations of the Volstead Act, obviously. And then rather taking his case to trial, which he kind of thought that he knew he was going to lose, McCoy just pled guilty to the charge, and he spent 9 months in jail and ended up paying a large fine. So, of course, you know, having the fees that he was able to make during his running, it was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty inexpensive transaction. You know, despite having lost a profitable run-running venture and his ships confiscated by the Coast Guard, the McCoys amassed a considerable fortune that they later put back into their boat building business and into the booming Florida real estate market. Now, unlike other bootleggers and rum runners, the McCoy brothers took measures to deliver the best product to their clients. They never engaged in diluting their alcohol or cutting it from dangerous substances, and business with organized crime figures was never conducted, and they even paid their crews more than other rum-running outfits to keep them from stealing product. And this was actually a very common occurrence. If you are a bootlegger and those supporting your operation, if they don't feel they're being paid enough, they know ways to put you out of business, still maintain contacts with their suppliers, and who's to say they couldn't just take over the rum-running business for themselves? Now, the business was a game changer for the Bahamian economy. There were exploding alcohol sales and a massive increase in alcohol tourism at the time that made the Bahamas a vacation hotspot. So it radically transformed their economy, and one that is still mainly has not changed since the 1940s. And this was due in large part to Prohibition and the scores of rum runners who brought their product overseas and sold it in international waters. Now, despite numerous complaints by the United States government, the British Foreign Office never really intervened in the rum-running operations. In fact, Winston Churchill thought that Prohibition was the greatest affront to humanity and it was the stupidest idea that could ever be, really, ever be enforced. But Prohibition is not without its darker narrative, though, as is the case with all history. Alcohol statistics during the Prohibition are, in the best definition, paradoxical. Production, sale, distribution, and consumption of alcohol was down, and alcohol-related crimes, such as driving under the influence and public intoxication, were down in some regions. Now, on the contrary, that same data showed an exponential increase in other regions, so much that even stricter legislation was passed to crack down on abusers. One example is New York's Mullen Gauge Law, where carrying a flask was equal to carrying an unlicensed handgun. Now, Prohibition also, if you know some of this history, it provided ample opportunities to create a national crime syndicate. And here we really see the professionalization and rapid expansion of organized crime, of the mafia, in the United States. So crime families made a killing during Prohibition. They made an incredible amount of money that allowed them to do other things and further infiltrate into society. There were so many alcohol-related fatalities that also exploded overnight. And the 1920s, while it's seen as this period of partying and prohibition, these were times when people really went off the deep end. Now, researching the history of prohibition without incorporating William McCoy, though, is like discussing the Constitutional Convention and not mentioning like Alexander Hamilton or James Madison. You know, we always hear about the phrase "the real McCoy," and no one has ever really figured out exactly where that phrase come from. But when you think about it in historical terms of prohibition, William McCoy providing the real product to all of his customers, you know, the original alcohol, the unchanged alcohol, undiluted alcohol, he was giving you the real thing. So is William McCoy the real McCoy? Well, I like to think that. And McCoy's rum-running career gained a folklore status in the U.S., and his story kind of stands out amongst all other bootleggers for his aversion to violence, and he even retired early to capitalize on his adventurous gains. You know, we hear about many bootleggers who are caught by the authorities, and they have everything confiscated from them, and they, you know, sometimes end up, you know, dying in prison, or they come back with nothing, and they're left destitute. But William McCoy, he knew when the right time was to get out. And fortunately for him, he got out the right time. So, but with that, the rum-running operations that he still ran, that he ran, and even after his arrest in 1923, Rum Row never went away. Now, History Here and Now is a website dedicated to the research and writing about different historical topics. If you like this podcast, hit the like button, share it on social media, recommend it to your friends, family, colleagues, anyone you think would enjoy hearing a history discussion. You can also follow History Here and Now on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can check back every week for another new episode. So until then, good luck on this crazy ride called life. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.